Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle. www.serotalk.com, a production of Serotalk Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 94 for February 6th, 2012. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Anger.
I'm Joe Steinkamp.
Starting off this week with AT, hope is back. Hope springs eternal.
All right, there's hope for us after all.
Yes, indeed. The Windows app, Hope, that makes Pandora work wonderfully for blind people, was kind of broken, I guess, for a while, thanks to some updates that Pandora did, from what I understand, some fairly major ones, and also some piracy problems that Christopher Toth was having with people who decided
people
to go ahead
and
steal
$10.
The product.
I should steal
no,
that instead.
I mean, my goodness.
Come on.
Yes. So I have not installed the newest version. I obviously am going to soon, but apparently there is a new scheme that should sort of fix that problem.
I'm happy to hear that. I think that he should make money and have his product protected. So yeah, it's a good thing.
In more AT news, NVDA has released version 2012.1, beta 1. That's a tongue twister indeed. Their naming scheme is a little interesting, but it works, I guess. More fluent Braille reading, improvements in Microsoft Word, and support for the iTunes Store. So another one of those things that I may play with, although I'm less and less enthused about putting beta software on my computer just because. But for those who really want to do that, I'm sure it will be just fine. Go check it out. And we have talked in the past about GW Micro's new app, GW Skype. Well, apparently Skype didn't much care for GW using their name in said product. So in compliance with Skype's request, the name has been changed. There was a little contest of sorts. You didn't actually win anything, but you got a chance to vote and to name the product. And the name of choice was GW Connect. So still same product, just different name.
Not K-I-N-N.
The Microsoft camera thing.
Okay.
So you can't.
I'm just making sure because they're both Microsoft products. So I don't want to go from Skype to Xbox Connect.
There is that. So yeah, you can't wave your hands at it and have it do things.
Oh, man, I make gestures at Skype all the time, but
yeah, don't we all? I tend to use a particular finger more than any other, really. So
absolutely, and I don't mean iOS gestures. Oh wait, no, that was obvious, wasn't it? Okay, sorry, I'm being.
Let's just say that since GW Connect Skype thing has come out. No, I'll call it by the right name. Since GW Connect has come out, I actually don't recall that I have loaded the native Skype client since that time. So that kind of tells you how I feel about Skype.
Once you load the native Skype, it's difficult to shut it down without killing it from Task Manager. And that's one thing I like about GW Connect is that you can make it go away gracefully.
Yes. And I was visiting with Mark at ATIA about GW Connect. And I asked him if they were considering making the app a paid product rather than, I mean, obviously you can purchase Windowize and make the ads go away, and that's a great thing to do. But some people might not want to spend quite that much money to make the ads go away. And I was told that they are considering it. So I don't have a concrete yes on that, but I think they're definitely thinking about it. I think that would be a good thing, personally.
I do too. And if you want to catch that interview among many, many others, you can check out SPN Radio, where we are streaming ATIA coverage.
And we also have some on-demand coverage coming very shortly in the coming weeks. You will be able to download the interviews that I, Derek, and Joe did at ATIA, as well as, I believe, listen to some of them on this very podcast from time to time. So stay tuned, as they say. We're not quite finished talking about GW Micro just yet. Joe, I have a feeling you probably need to tackle this one, because I suspect, did you get to look at the new Voca Text Plus.
I had only briefly got to see the new Vocatext Plus. Vocatext is one of the video magnifiers that GW Micro has begun to offer that has voice as well as the ability to use the video magnifier. So kind of an OCR kind of situation. The article here talks about some of the changes that have come to it. It's a very interesting and durable unit, as you might remember from our coverage at NFB of last year. The great thing about these new video magnifiers is that they can be upgraded very easily and have new features added to them. And as we saw with that ATIA coverage, we've seen more and more changes coming to video magnifiers. I mean, at this point, they're no longer just cameras. In some cases, they have touch screens that'll react as such, or they'll have built-in speech, or in some cases, like with the Vocatext, you've got OCR. Therefore, you know, it's hard to categorize them. And pop on over to this particular article to learn a little bit more about that. We'll talk a little more about Vocatext also when we get to our CSUN coverage later in the month. That's right, we're not done covering all the events of the year just yet. We've still got CSUN and NFB ACB to come. So keep it right here on iBlink Radio, SPN Radio, and all of our abilities to bring you content, either through our tweet feeds or others.
Also in AT this week, let's talk about recording and editing software, and more specifically, Reaper. Now, the guys that do the wonderful post-production on our Saratalk podcasts and all of the other podcasts for that matter, EOL, Triple Click Home, That Android Show, these guys use Reaper. And so it might be a good thing to bring Patrick in if he would like to join us for a second and talk about Reaper accessibility and what might be some concerns there, because we actually have a link to a forum where you can actually vote to have the developers of Reaper build accessibility into the product. Patrick?
Well, hi, Jamie. You know, it's really great being the post-production editor for this particular podcast because I didn't actually hear you call my name when this thing was originally recorded, so now I'll just insert myself here a little bit later and talk for a couple of seconds about Reaper accessibility. So as things stand right now, as far as Reaper accessibility is concerned, there's a product called ReAccess, which was made by a Russian guy called Ivan, don't remember his last name. But there are a few issues with ReAccess. First of all, it's really awesome in that it talks directly to Reaper and then interfaces directly with your screen reader if you're using JAWS, WindowEyes, NVDA, or System Access anyway. It doesn't seem to work with HAL or any of the Dolphin products. But it presents things in a very nice way. You have the ability to read meters, you know what track you're on instantly, all the parameters speak. It's really great. The problem, though, is that it's not open source. The guy who originally wrote it seems to have disappeared off the face of the earth, and it doesn't really quite work with newer versions of Reaper the way you would expect it to. So the idea of this is to make Reaper itself more accessible so that you don't necessarily have to depend on these plugins. While the way ReAccess works is incredibly nice and it does the job very well, it's not native to Reaper. In order to make ReAccess do its thing, they had to change some of the keys. They had to build a new key map for it. They had to change some of the default Reaper behavior. Not very much of it, though. They did a pretty good job of not interfering too much with the way Reaper works by default. So even if you're not necessarily a musician or an audio person, you should definitely give this thing a look, give it your vote, if for nothing else, for the obvious, that being advocacy and accessibility and all that good stuff, but also to keep the Saratalk post-production team happy, and then we can keep providing you this wonderful content.
What I liked about this forum post is that it wasn't just the blind people commenting in favor of this access. There were lots of sighted folks, too, who understood that it was definitely a good thing. And so that's one nice thing about belonging to the Reaper community or a community in general, I guess, is that people are going to back you up even if it doesn't directly affect them. They're coming out in support of this.
We have an article here, 100 excellent hints and tips for every computer user. Lots of things. There are several of those things that are visual, such as speeding up the mouse pointer. I don't know that I so much care about that one. But Word and Excel tips, email tips, how to set up disposable email addresses, just several good things there that you can take a look at. How to rip to MP3 with Windows Media Player. So go ahead and check those out, those tips over on our show notes page at saratalk.com.
some of those tips in the previous article were about keyboard shortcuts, which I personally am a huge fan of. And it looks like Netflix, too, can be customized with keyboard shortcuts, at least if you're using Firefox. There is a script to add keyboard shortcuts to Netflix. If you're using Firefox, they mentioned that Chrome may work as well, but your mileage may vary. The only issue I see here with this, this is a great idea, but I'm still wondering if the screen reader is going to intercept those keystrokes. So if you're pressing H to move to on-demand content or whatever that keystroke does, your screen reader is going to want to move you by heading instead. So you may have to turn that off as you're doing your Netflix browsing if you want to use these things.
And finally, in AT News, unfortunately, we have to end on a sad note this week. Jim Bliss, the co-founder of Telesensory Systems Incorporated and founder of J. Bliss Imaging, passed away. He developed the Opticon, and that's a product that I actually had the opportunity to use several years ago, just for a short time. But what a piece of hardware that was. Very revolutionary, very impressive.
It absolutely was. Yeah. I can remember using that as a child, and it was the manner in which I learned to recognize the shape of print letters. Now, I never got extremely fast with the Opticon, but there was nothing quite like being able to take a piece of print paper, which at the time would have been totally inaccessible to me, because even hand scanners, handheld scanners that could then use OCR, they were in their infancy. So you really didn't have an opportunity to look at something unless it had been transcribed in Braille, unless you were using the Opticon. So I just want to say thank you, Jim, for all of your hard work. The community very much appreciates you, and you will be missed.
So that was just some of the news that happened at ATIA. And as we said, you can definitely catch that on SamNet Radio, which is now SPN Radio, by the way. We have changed the name to go along with our Serotalk podcast network. So you can definitely catch all of that coverage. And you can also listen to This Month in Tech for January on Serospectives. That was an excellent show, and I think you will find a lot of good information there. And be sure, when we do these live, to join the live event, because you can come into the chat room, the live chat room, and there's a lot of really interesting discussion that goes on during these events.
Some You're not really kidding either. Some of the debate can get very heated, but that's kind of what we're hoping for. Not that people are going to jump up and start punching each other, but when we do these live shows or even podcasts, we want to get people talking about things and thinking about things and examining how they feel about the topics that we're bringing up. And I think a lot of times getting into debates like this can make people consider things that they never had before. So it's always a good time.
Speaking of people who have some really great things to say and share the content with us, Allison Mervis wrote an article about jailbreaking your iPhone 4S or iPad 2. Not nearly as scary as it might sound. That has been posted over on the Serotalk blog, and you can go read that. And it's really thorough. She does an excellent job explaining how to go about the process, what you can expect, some pitfalls that she ran into. So just a really well-written article, and our thanks to Allison for sharing that information with us. Moving on to Apple news. Apple releases OS X 10.7.3. Some operating system fixes, some bug fixes. Other than people on Twitter saying they had updated, I didn't see anything remarkable one way or the other. So I think that's probably a good sign.
No news is good news sometimes. Nothing broke horribly, and I didn't notice anything that I was super happy about. There don't appear to be any voiceover improvements in this version, but there may very well be. It's just that nobody's noticed them, and they aren't listed in the change log.
Ars Technica does have an article about some random issues that require you to download the actual whole big, gigantic 1.3 combo fix. But they seem to be very, very rare. And most people are not having the issues that are mentioned within this Ars Technica, which we'll have here in the show notes.
Oh, boy. Well, if you want to hear more about Lion and various other Apple things, you can check out Triple Click Home, the podcast dedicated to all things Apple.
There is a new book from National Braille Press, The iPhone Tactile Screenshot Quick Reference Guide. It's in print Braille. It's $27, not bad at all. And basically, there are some screenshots that let you kind of know what the layout of the screen is on the iPhone. So definitely something to check out if you have an iPhone. It's a great companion book to Getting Started with the iPhone by Anna Dresner and Dean Martineau.
There's an article talking about why the 13-inch MacBook should go away now, which makes me a little sad because I love my 13-inch MacBook. But the article does make some good points, especially given that we're kind of moving into the era of ultrabooks. You know, thinner is better. The article points out, how often do you really use your optical drive? And I actually have used mine within the last month, so I can say it's worth it. Although you could just as easily get an external. But the theory is that Apple may be dropping the 13-inch Pro, and you would just have MacBook Airs in that 13-inch size, as well as the 11-inch, of course. And then the 15-inch MacBook Pro would become the device of choice for those who wanted something that was a little beefier, I guess, and had the optical drive and a couple of other things that the Pro has that the Airs do not. But I don't want to see my 13-inch Pro go away anytime soon.
So what are your thoughts about a perhaps like a tablet laptop type device, kind of not one or the other, sort of straddling the fence, as our next article talks about?
This makes a lot of sense to me. The article talks about how a lot of people are using things like iPads or Android tablets, and then they're pairing them with Bluetooth keyboards. So you have the feel of a laptop where you can type as quickly as you normally would, but you're using the apps on this, some would say, media consumption device or whatever, and you're being productive that way. Again, to me, this makes a lot of sense. My personal current problem with this is that on the iPhone, I don't have an iPad, nor do I have an Android tablet, but on the iPhone at least, I haven't found an ideal word processing suite that will let me look at spreadsheets accessibly and compose documents that are more than just text documents. You know, they need some formatting. They need to look all pretty and have bullet points and so on. That's one thing that's important to me. So I couldn't fully make this move, but I think that the future is that's where we're headed.
And remember that you can catch more talk about Android 4 on that Android show. And I suspect this is one of those topics they'll probably get into. In internet news this week, Firefox 10 is officially released. Now, I've been hearing that there were going to be some great advancements for screen reader users. And again, I haven't really seen a lot of comment on Twitter. Perhaps I've not been looking in the right place. But again, it seems to be kind of quiet on that front.
Sadly, most of the comments I see on Twitter about Firefox have to do with very heavy memory usage. I don't know if they've addressed that in the latest version. I am glad to see that they're doing some accessibility work, although it's, like you said, Jamie, not talked about as often as maybe it could be. But I hope that they've addressed some of the stability issues, because those are things that do continue to crop up and I hear comments about all the time.
On the install of Firefox 10, you're asked about add-ons or certain things that will allow you to speed up the experience. I had a toolbar that I've been trying to figure out how to remove in 9 that actually 10 came up and said, would you like me to remove this to make it a better experience? I went, oh, yes, please do. So it does look like they're trying to do some things. And I think, again, it's one of those where this rapid release schedule is very difficult for people to play catch up. And not only that, it fragments your market, because we run into in technical support occasionally where people are you know, I'm on version X. And you're like, well, did you know Y is out? What? When did Y come out? And I think that's one of those where certain things like Chrome does it in the background. So you don't really completely know, unless you're kind of a developer, what version Chrome is per se. And Firefox, as we talked about on this show a couple of months ago, thought about doing that. And of course, I ran into heavy user comments because people are used to what they're used to, what you've kind of already laid out. The same way that Facebook has a version number, but you don't really know what that is. And in fact, in Facebook's situation, you don't always know who has what. Your friend could actually have a feature you don't, because Facebook rolls out features very stealthily. But what wasn't stealthily was the announcement of a gigantic new IPO. This almost feels like dot-com 2.0 again. Facebook goes public and goes after billions.
Oh, boy. Of course, the interesting thing is that we, as lowly consumers, we're not going to have a shot to buy this stock just yet. And even when we do, there's an article, a Molly rant, in fact, from Molly Wood at CNET, talking about why you might not want to buy Facebook stock even when you can. The company has grown so exponentially over the last year or two. How much more growth can they really expect? At some point, you're just going to run out of people, you know? And beyond that, they're probably going to have some ups and downs, and Facebook is not a blue chip stock per se, like something like IBM was back in the day. You know, IBM was a very stable company. You kind of knew what to expect in general, and Facebook isn't so much like that. So if you're considering investing, do some research and really consider it before you do that.
Or ask Rupert Murdoch. You know, he bought MySpace for $500 million and then sold it last year for $35 million. So, I mean, there's a perfect, you know, these things.
He's obviously, you know, the person to give advice, yes.
Absolutely. About social media, that man really gets it. Go read his Twitter feed.
He does indeed.
You'll get so much more about it.
I did find Mark Zuckerberg's letter interesting that we linked to. Facebook has a social mission, talking about why the company was started and you know, that it wasn't originally created to be a company, but it was built to accomplish a social mission to make the world more open and connected. Talks about the fact that, you know, it starts with just two people communicating, and then it spreads and grows.
He makes some very good points in the letter, but I still found myself, I guess, being a little bit cynical because it felt almost defensive. You know, it felt like he wanted to justify bringing the company public. We're not really here to make money. It's just that we have to make money to do what we want to do. And in a sense, that's true. But he states this in several different ways, several different times during the letter. And it just, again, felt to me like, look, we're not really greedy and money grubbing. There's a good reason for this. Seriously.
Oh, well, if you truly believe that, let me take my information out. Let me export timelines. If you really, truly believe it's between two people, then knock down the walled garden. I can't buy into the openness argument here if you're not going to allow me to come and go as I please. And it took a very long time to get pages where you can let people subscribe but not actually be a part of Facebook. I mean, for a long time, the only way you could get to Facebook info was to sign into the Facebook. And I hear what he's saying, but I agree with you. I think there's some revisionist history at work here.
There's no doubt they've made several mistakes, and I feel like they do want to scramble and make things better for no other reason than they're going to, you know, somebody's going to crack down on them if they don't. And again, great points about connectedness and this is how we communicate now and so on. But I just feel like it was wrapped up in a bunch of political stuff that I don't really go for.
Coming up after the break, your emails and a trip to Disney right here on the Serotalk podcast.
Hi, I'm Ryan Seacrest for RAD. Over 300 people in this country are killed every week by a drunk driver. That's the equivalent of 2 747 plane crashes every single week. And the problem isn't going away unless we all do our part to stop it. So if you see someone who's about to drive after drinking, get the keys. Don't leave it up to anyone else. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
3 billion lives ended on August 29, 1997. The survivors of the nuclear fire called the war Judgment Day. They lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines.
Dude, run over there into that burned out house.
Oh my God!
Whoa. Hunter killer,
run! And this is the podcast you invited me on?
The computer which controlled the machines, Skynet, sent two Terminators back through time. Their mission? To destroy the leader of the human resistance, John Connor, my son.
We're back here on Serotalk Podcast 94. You want to be sure and check out EOL Episode 6. You can go to eolshow.com, or you can certainly listen on iBlink Radio, and we welcome you to do that as well.
Yeah, this month we welcome our robot overlords. Wait, did I say overlords? I meant protectors.
From the mailbag this week, we begin with an iReport from Jedi talking about human narration for the Braille monitor.
Hi there, this is Jedi Murky calling from Shreveport, Louisiana. I was listening to the latest Serotalk podcast, and there was a question as to whether or not there are human narration available for the Braille monitor, and the answer is yes. You can actually, on the website, read the Braille monitor in text, or you can listen to an MP3 file for each of the articles, so you can hear the full monitor read. And so I'm guessing that all of those files have been coagulated, if you will, onto the thumb drives that are being distributed to people who want them. So there's the answer to your question. And if you have any more, you can always call the Federation at 410-659-9314. Thanks.
Thanks for that comment, Jedi. And after I was thinking about it, as I was listening to your comments, I remember that you can, in fact, go to online, listen to the Braille monitor being read by a human, obviously just as it was done on cassette. So I suspect they will probably continue that practice and just make it digital so you can download that. The February edition of the monitor is out. It is online as of this recording, by the way. Our next iReport is from Russell Rowland, and he talks about iBooks.
Hey, this is Russell Rowland. And I'm just calling to make a couple of comments. First, about the release of and the announcement of iBooks going to be releasing textbooks. I really think this personally is a good thing. I hope it really takes off. It'll really make my life as a college student much easier. And I also want to kind of comment about the Facebook password security as well. You know, I personally wouldn't ever share my password to Facebook or my email with anybody because, well, I really don't like my privacy. You know, I like things to be secure and backed up. I really enjoy the podcast. Very informative and very informal as well. And just like the information, like keeping up with what's going on. So I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
Thanks, Russell. Glad to hear from you again. You can listen to my interview with Russell back on Tower Talk Podcast 90. Yeah, I agree. There's some really good things coming for education in iBooks, and it's going to be interesting to see how that all develops. And I also agree with you that I would not share my Facebook or any other password with anyone else. Mike Arrigo sends an email, and he is not crazy about the accessibility of Bleo on Android. JJ is going to be talking more about that on That Android Show, so you definitely want to be sure and check out that podcast. In our roundabout segment this week, a device that helps visually impaired people walk freely. This is kind of an interestingly written article, actually. It's from India, and I wonder if the language translation has a little bit maybe to do with this. I'm not sure. It's a hepatic belt that vibrates on sensing human obstructions. We keep seeing this over and over and over. This keeps popping up, whether it's shoes or, you know, a helmet or just all kinds of different things that keep coming around here.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. And the article basically says blind people can walk without sticks now. And yeah, yes. I just thought it was funny to refer to it that way. The problem is that I don't think any of these devices really cover the whole spectrum. I mean, this particular belt is going to help you avoid human obstructions and things like that. But honestly, you know, I would much rather run into a human because they're a lot more soft than like face planting on the pavement because you tripped off a curb. So the belt doesn't detect those types of drop-offs. You know, I guess you got to pair this with the Bluetooth shoes that we talked about a few months ago. And who knows, you probably got to wear the Kinect helmet also. But I like that people are considering this an issue and wanting to tackle it, wanting to do something with technology to make things better. I just don't think we're there yet.
Finally, in our roundabout segment this week, a trip to Disney by Mike Calvo and his family. And Mike actually writes, as Mike always does, an excellent blog post that you can read on the Serotalk blog as well as on Serotech on that blog. And we have a link to the article in our show notes. Not only that, we're actually going to visit with Mike about this experience. It's a device that's a handheld device, and you wear headphones, and you have audio description of your surroundings to a great extent. Things that are there, descriptions of actions that are taking place, rides, that sort of thing. It sounds like a really wonderful experience, and I can't wait to talk to Mike about this.
Absolutely. I've never been to Disney. I want to go now.
Me too. I actually had a similar experience, although not nearly as profound, I don't think, as Mike had. In Branson, Missouri, there is an exhibit, a Titanic exhibit, and they have, and this is not just for blind people, this is for everyone, an audio device that you can listen to additional commentary and narration or actually interviews from relatives of those who survived on the Titanic, even a couple people who actually did survive. And that was a great experience for me to be able to get the additional information. So every place I go, I always check to see if they have any kind of audio aids. And 9 times out of 10, I am disappointed. They either don't have anything at all, or it's something, you know, that is for sighted people that I can kind of sort of use. But very seldom do I find anything that's really specifically for visually impaired people. So,
which is unfortunate. But, you know, I wonder how much of that, and Mike makes this point in the article, and I just kind of have to piggyback on that and say I agree. How much of our not finding this kind of stuff is because we don't shout it from the rooftops when somebody does do it right? We're really good at saying, I hate that. They really made a piece of junk. They shouldn't have even tried, or they hate blind people, et cetera, et cetera. But when a company does do it right, a lot of us sort of accept that as our due. And in an ideal world, that's true. But I think companies need to understand the impact that they truly have when they become accessibility minded.
You also want to call ahead. If it's a major museum and you're in a very large city like I'm outside of Houston, there is some audio narration or description available, and it's actually provided by the local radio reading services. So in a lot of cases, you may have references or resources you're not even aware of. So if you see something on television, like there's a major art exhibit, or if there's something like the ballet, or again, like we have the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, one of those performances is usually described, you might not even know that it's out there without doing just a little bit of research or falling onto it. I know I found audio description by accident when I'm standing in line for something, and a worker at the site comes up and says, hey, did you know blah, 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 blah. And, you know, no, I didn't even think that that was there, and I appreciate you letting me know. So doing a little research ahead of time about what you want to go see might help, and then contacting, if you don't see it there, then contacting someone who is in charge of guest affairs or someone who is involved with public relations. They might be able to put something together and then open up those doors for you that you didn't even know that were even available to you.
Well, that's going to wrap up the news for this week, but definitely stick around because I am going to visit with Mike about his experience at Disney. At the end of the show, you have contact information. Go over to serotalk.com and check out our show notes. Until next time, have a great week.
Thanks for listening.
As promised, we are joined by Mike Calvo to talk about his experience with Disney. And Mike, we talked about that on Roundabout, and we just mentioned your blog post, but my goodness, did that ever get a lot of traffic on Twitter. People are really interested to hear what you have to say about your experience going to Disney.
You know, I'd love to take credit for people wanting to hear what I have to say, but I actually think that whenever you put Disney into anything, it's just that Midas touch. So I appreciate the vote of confidence there, my friend, but I would venture to say that it is more the mouse or the rat, depending on who you talk to, than the bat. Oh, wait, did I say, I'm going to offend people now. See, I start offending people. Anyway, I'm kidding. But yeah, what do you want to know? I really enjoyed my experience there, as most folks read. And I do think it is a great read. And besides it being a great read, I think people should show it to other people.
Okay. Well, let's start by kind of arriving at the park. How did you know that this device even existed?
You know, I had seen the device mentioned at some point in the huge amounts of Twitter and email and Facebook traffic that I see in a day, sometime, somewhere in the last year and something. And then last year, I know that the AFB Access Award, which we won at Serotech, it was given to Disney and very much deserved, I think. And that was kind of it. And, you know, we had a friend of ours that said, hey, I got these tickets. They're about to expire. You know, we're only going to throw them away. So why don't you take advantage of them and take your family? And I have a large family. I have four kids with me. I have five kids in total. One doesn't live with me. And then the other four live with me. And I said, well, you know, we're usually not able to afford to go to Disney because it's very expensive to get in the door. Even for Florida residents sometimes, unless you like save up, it's certainly not something you usually do on a whim. So I said, sure. And as I was browsing the Disney page to see, you know, the times and the times that the parks were open and all that stuff, I realized, hey, here's this device, because they talked about guests with disabilities, and oh, let's see what's going on over there. And I had forgotten about the device and they mentioned it. So I said, wow, I got to check this out. I was excited. I got all hot and bothered, you know, and decided to go get my geek on at the park. And as you read, boy, was I touched, and I was pleased. You know, I was pleased because I saw what Disney had done. And one of the big things is that regardless of what got Disney to that point, because I think that unlike Apple, where Apple was kind of pushed into it through I don't know if it was actual litigation or the threat of litigation, but you know, Apple really took the accessibility ball and ran with it. And they really, Apple as well as Disney, just take an Imagineering approach to things that I just find refreshing and exciting, where they just say, well, we're here, so we might as well, you know, Apple-fy it or Disney-fy it or whatever, you know. It really was exciting to me to see that Disney just did something so, so cool. The thing that made me sad was that unlike Apple, where they said, well, let's start putting some users of this technology in commercials, let's start putting them up front and center. A lot of blind folks don't know that there is a blind lady. And from what I understand, not that this makes a difference, but a very pretty blind lady, from what I understand, in the Siri commercials. Or in at least one of them at the end. And, you know, she just kind of happens upon her. You know, you see her. She doesn't have a speaking role or whatever. But, hey, I'm the blind lady. No, but, you know, it was very cool to see that Apple did that. And I'm really sad that Disney, while I really believe that Disney did this to comply and also to make guests with disabilities comfortable in their theme parks, it kind of sent me a silent message as a consumer that I've never seen this advertised as a way for me to have equal access. It's never been marketed. It's always been kind of like, oh, this is the thing we're doing for our guests with disabilities, or you know, a cool technology so that blind people can enjoy the parks or as well. I've never seen a report from a blind person mentioning it. That's even more disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen anything pertaining to the consumer viability of the whole thing. And that just made me sad. And it kind of pushed me to write the piece to say, you know, people, we really gripe. We really complain. We make our voices heard when somebody doesn't do something right. And I can bring up the Kindle Fire as a great example of where we all got really ticked off and made our voices heard. And unfortunately, it's fallen on deaf ears. I don't consider Amazon's placement of a job seeking or a job position on their website to be an answer to our griping. Amazon has just hidden behind its corporate facade and not said a word. And I think that instead of facing the situation that they've done to our community on purpose, front and center, and apologizing for it and saying we're going to do better in the future and redeeming itself, all it's done is just tick us off even more by its resistance to admit that it dropped the ball when it came to accessibility. That being said, though, I don't think we give enough accolades when a product is made accessible and put out to the market. Not that we need to, oh, thank you for recognizing me. It's so wonderful. I'm just talking about just going out there and reviewing it as a blind person and making sure it gets into the mainstream. You know, yeah. It doesn't need to be this big groveling, oh, thank you for, you know, serving the needs of a, you know, poor, lowly blind person. That's not what I mean at all. You know, I just mean the same way as a sighted person would go and give a review on Amazon or on Yelp or on Twitter or on Facebook or wherever you choose to give your reviews, you know, The same thing for us as blind folks to say, you know what? I was able to use this technology. My family enjoyed it. I enjoyed this. I enjoyed that about the park. I enjoyed the other. And I happened to do it with this wonderful device that Disney, you know, put together that that allows me to enjoy this on the equal level with my sighted peers. So that I think was the main thing of the whole post for me. And of course, sharing the fact that it really was very touching. I mean, I was able to have discussions with my children that I have not ever been able to have before at a Disney theme park. And for that, I am forever grateful as a parent, as a Disney guest. And because I feel that Disney did go the extra mile. One could argue if they had to or not, it doesn't really matter. The point is that they did. And thank you for that, Disney.
I find it interesting that the device doesn't even have a name, or at least not that we know of, right?
That was what really bothered me. That just shows me that Disney did what they needed to do to give the service, but it wasn't important enough. They didn't consider it a valuable enough moneymaker to give it a brand or give it a label or give it a title. The other thing that I find that's really sad is there are at least three other theme park type situations that are using the same device. The Coca-Cola Museum is one. The Patriots Museum, for those of you that are Patriots fans, is using the same technology. And there's one more, and I don't remember what it is. But none of them are advertising that they use this technology. And I haven't heard any of our blind travel experts, of which there are a few on Twitter, even mention such a thing. So shame on all you guys, because I really would like all this information. Thank you very much.
Exactly. So what does this thing look like? Kind of describe the form factor a little bit.
Well, the device is kind of bulky. I mean, it's not tiny, okay? But at the same time, I mean, it has a flat screen on the front that's kind of under this cover that you flip back if you want to look at the screen. It is kind of rugged, you know, so it's not something that's going to break easily. It does fit in a pocket. It weighs about eight ounces. It comes with a pair of over-the-ear earphones that I found a little uncomfortable just because, I mean, I want to hear the people around me and all that stuff. So what I did was I just unplugged that. And those, and I just plugged in my little single earphone and put that over my ear, and it was whispering to me basically throughout the, you know, the day. The battery life on it was amazing. I was there from 10 o'clock in the morning all the way to almost 9 o'clock at night, and the battery never gave out. And, you know, for a wireless device that at very minimum is doing, you know, wireless, you know, of some kind, 802.11, pick your letter, or yeah, GPS or whatever. It was pretty amazing that the battery lasted that long and it never gave out. The instructions were clear. I'd love to have seen it use TTS as opposed to voice recordings. And you guys can, through the magic of Patrick's editing, play a couple of those in just a little bit. But, you know, I think that a human-sounding TTS like Neo or something would be perhaps a better fit. That's just my opinion. But, you know, some people are uncomfortable with TTS, so I can understand. But the device is about the size of a sandwich.
Okay.
I think that's a good...
Which would also be expensive at Disney, probably, right?
You know, what isn't expensive at Disney? But you know what? I'll tell you something. And that's a great point, is expensive.
Okay.
I found myself as a consumer, and rightly or wrongly, a purist that believes that everything should be accessible, the world should be a universally accessible place, and all that. And I like to feel that I'm in that category to a certain degree, would say, well, your feelings about this are wrong. But I found myself being appreciative and thankful that Disney mm-hmm. did that. And I'm not groveling and kissing butt here. I'm being honest. I found right. myself being thankful because I was able to share in an experience with my family. And you know what? Experiences with my family to me are priceless.
Yeah.
And so it took the expensiveness of Disney. Now, granted, I got in for free with my friend's tickets, but right. had I paid for it? And what it's going to prompt me to do now is to look into Florida resident passes, which I would have never looked into. I mentioned that Olympus incorporates accessibility into their products like Apple does. And for yeah. me as a blind consumer, we are doing some mobile video shooting for CSUN and some things that are coming up. And we're purchasing an HD camera for doing that. And mm-hmm. I went with Olympus. Now, the Olympus camera that I bought just so happens not to have, you know, the voice guidance. And I'm sure Olympus right. figured, well, how many blind people are going to use video cameras? So why put it in there? Yeah. But the point is that I bought Olympus, and there are, in my opinion, there may be better recorders out there, video recorders, but I stopped at Olympus because you right. know what? They cared enough about blind people to put accessibility into a lot of their products in their digital recorders. So when it came to buying something else, I went back and I bought it. And I feel mm-hmm. the same way about Apple. I feel the same way about Disney. You know, I don't feel the same way about Android because I feel that Android has been dragged kicking and screaming to the accessibility world. And I hope that they, you know, we will forget one day, Android or Google, but we haven't forgotten yet. And you still got some uphill climbing to do as far as it goes for me as a blind consumer to trust you that you have my best accessible interests at heart. You know, and I think I speak for a lot of the people in our community. There are some diehard Android supporters like Mike Arrigo and others and the folks on That Android Show. I mean, we support Android as far as its technical abilities, but I am not very helpful as a consumer yet in the accessibility aspects of Android. So that's all I've got to say about that.
I don't want to turn this into a tutorial, most definitely, but give us just a little bit of an idea of what sort of information you can get on the device.
Well, I think that would better be served with an audio sample. How's that?
Let's do it.
Hollywood Boulevard audio menu. Choose one of seven. 1. Area description.
Disney's chic 1930s and 40s style Hollywood Boulevard paves the way to the experiences and landmarks of the world of showbiz. Silver screen glamour, Broadway style spectacles, popular TV, and behind-the-scenes know-how create the Hollywood that never was and always will be. Stunt performances, interactive shows, and gallery exhibits await us as we stroll among shops and restaurants modeled on a range of looks, from Spanish mission-style stucco and tile to elegant Art Deco.
Choose one of two. 1. Detailed description.
At the start of Hollywood Boulevard, a souvenir and info kiosk welcomes us, declaring crossroads of the world. It sports a sleek column whose crowning feature is a silvery globe rotating under the feet of a Mickey Mouse statue. From here, An early and mid-20th century skyline invites us to shop Disney's snazziest retailers. Nearby, the white streamlined Oscars Super Service Station, themed with gas pumps and a tow truck, provides strollers, wheelchairs, and ECVs. The boulevard's deco buildings gleam with period details like spirals, concentric triangles, bands of chrome, and cheerful awnings. A striped pattern zigzags across the facade of the Celebrity Five and Dime. Spanish-style buildings bear inlaid tiles and wrought iron lanterns and balconies. More details along the street continue the fun. A mechanical traffic sign's red and green signals are accompanied by an automated stop-or-go arm that swings up. A fountain flows near a helpful tips chalkboard updated regularly by cast members. A statue and commemorative plaque relay a message from Michael Eisner. A topiary sorcerer Mickey from Fantasia oversees sculptures of walking broomsticks who carry buckets of flowering plants to and from the flower beds. On the rooftops, nostalgic billboards lit by gooseneck lamps advertise Kodak, Chevrolet, and the historic name Hollywoodland. At the far end of Hollywood Boulevard, we face a multi-story sculpture of Mickey's sorcerer hat from Fantasia. It stands tipped by a giant white-gloved hand. Two thick curlicues suggest both magical energy and Mickey's ears. Guests walk under the hat, which is supported by golden helix-shaped frameworks of metal. Near Mickey's hat is the Brown Derby restaurant. A simple red awning hints at the upscale dining experience inside. Beyond the sorcerer's hat is a replica of Hollywood's Chinese theater. The theater, modeled on an imperial palace, boasts a bronze curtain and gong, a soaring dragon relief, and celebrity handprints on the cement walkway out front. The theater is home to the Great Movie Ride. Attraction description is available for this tour through Classic Movie Scenes.
So there you go. It tells you everything and then some. And, you know, one of the things that I really enjoyed, besides the description of the rides, and here's one for you to hear.
Inside a reproduction of Grauman's Chinese Theater, we find the Great Movie Ride. In this ride-through attraction, animatronic figures, life-size dioramas, and special effects create scenes from famous Hollywood movies. A winding queue leads us through the theater's spacious lobby. Decorated with Asian pottery and statues, and accented in red, gold, and black, it resembles a Chinese palace. Traditional Chinese brush paintings cover several walls, and glowing lanterns hang down from a high ceiling. We reach a small side room with two tall glass cases, displaying props and costumes from recent movies. The red-trimmed cases have upturned roofs like pagodas. We make our way into a large screening room, where a two-story tall movie screen plays trailers from movies featured in the attraction. On the two side walls, soft red curtains drape beneath a row of tall brush paintings depicting dragons, birds, and flowers. From here, we enter a movie sound stage, where we board our ride vehicle, a two-car tram with 24 rows of seats. When our ride begins, a tour guide sitting up front drives our tram past scenes from Hollywood movies. The soundstage waiting area features a glowing Art Deco-style marquee that reads, "Now playing, a spectacular journey into the movies. A cast of thousands, a sweeping spectacle of thrills, chills, romance."
Besides that kind of thing, I also like the descriptions that we would have of restaurants and just shopping areas and that kind of thing. And this is what that sounds like.
Hollywood Boulevard Audio Menu. Choose one of seven. 1. Area description. 2. Attractions. 3. Restrooms. 4. Food and beverage.
1. Table service. The Hollywood Brown Derby. The Hollywood Brown Derby serves steak, seafood, chicken, and the famous Brown Derby Cobb salad. Well-balanced and vegetarian options are available. Open for lunch and dinner. Advance reservations are recommended.
So there you go, Jamie. There's a great sampling there of what the product is. I mean, it's better to hear it than for me to sit here and try and struggle through and figure out to tell you what it's like. But right. I do think that because experience is the best teacher, of course, you know, if you're near California, if you're near Florida, why don't you go try it out for yourself?
So along with going to Disney, what are some ways that maybe we can advocate, not only by thanking Disney, but even other places? How can we let these parks and these venues know that we as blind people are out there?
Well, I think that it just comes from being yourself. You know, don't think that you're such a small, insignificant market that nobody wants to hear about you. Don't think that the most minimal review that you put somewhere isn't going to be seen. I am an avid Yelper. I put a lot of stuff up on Yelp just because I'm a foodie, man, and I like going to different restaurants and all that. And I never thought that one of my reviews would get blasted in an email all over Orlando, but it did. And I've gotten a few followers from that on Yelp. I'm sure some restaurant owners have gone through and read my reviews, and I've talked about, hey, you know, they accepted my guide dog. They didn't give me, you know, garbage about the dog. They were real accommodating when it came to Braille menus, or they didn't have Braille menus and they offered to have somebody read me the thing, which I think is very patronizing. You know, it's just be out there, be part of the mainstream, get involved. Don't sit in your blind bubble, you know, with other blind folks, even though I understand that's a lot of our comfort zone, especially now. You know, the interesting thing for me in looking at the evolution of our community, Jamie, is the fact that many of us grew up kind of on our own. We were lone rangers, lone blind rangers. And then when we got online, when we finally got connected, we felt very comfortable in the crowd mentality, in the power of us, what I call the power of us. And I think that that's important. I think that it's important that we maintain that connectivity between each other. But now, guys, it's time to go to the next level. It's time that we, since we are organized or getting that way, it's time to reach out to the mainstream and say, hey, you know, here's a whole community of blind people. And this is what we have to say, pick your subject, about the presidential candidate, about the economy, about the state of unemployment, about the, you know, about the products and services that we use, about the state of transportation, or what, pick your subject. We are, you know, people that have an opinion. We have a view, and your opinion is just as important as anybody else's. Darn it. Right. So go out there and share it wherever you can. And, you know, sometimes you're going to get rejected. Sometimes you're going to be accepted. And sometimes it's just going to be a situation where it's not accepted or rejected. It just kind of seems to fall on deaf ears. But much like that girl that today is taking naked pictures, lying on the hood of a car, and is going to have some explaining to do to her grandchildren 20 years from now, you know, things on the internet are always there. So don't despise small beginnings, people. Your voice counts. I can't tell you how many times I have to remind people of that, and even myself, because it does seem like an uphill battle. But you know, the hill is getting easier. It really is.
Something that I have been guilty of, and I hereby resolve to change this particular behavior. If I go to a restaurant and I pretty much think I know what I want to eat, I have declined Braille menus because, you know, I'm pretty sure I know what I want. I'm not going to do that anymore. Mm-mm. If someone offers me a Braille menu, I'm going to accept it and look at it. For one thing, I might actually find something else to eat, you know.
Take it a step further. Call the manager over. Be that guy that calls the manager over. You know, my mom was the manager of a restaurant, very popular restaurant in South Florida when I was a kid. And she said, Mikey, when a restaurant does something right, you need to tell them. And when they do something wrong, you need to tell them. And I can't tell you how many times I have told the server at a restaurant, excuse me, I know we're done with our meal, but I'd like to see a manager, please. And of course, as they think I'm going to gripe and complain. And I make it a point to say, I'd like you to call your server over here for a moment. I'd like to talk to you in front of the server. Mm-hmm. And then I proceed to tell them, you know, this server just bent over backwards to facilitate me as a customer, to facilitate my children. And I just want you to know that I am so pleased with the quality of food, with the quality of product, that I know that you guys work so hard to provide. And people like to hear that, you know. Yeah. And you know what? When you're blind, whether it's right or wrong, you are remembered. You are remembered. Man, I had a blind guy in the other day that was so polite to me and talked so nice about my server. And I wish the rest of everybody else was like that. And then the next time that that corporate entity comes up and says, well, you know, we need to get some Braille menus. You know, oh, yeah, you know, there's a blind guy came in here one time and spoke so highly of us. And we didn't have a menu, though. He mentioned we didn't have menus. I'm glad to see that we're finally getting them in here. You know, so don't ever underestimate the power of the impression that you make on people, you know, and do take advantage of calling over a manager and saying, you know, I've been here before and the service has been fantastic. And I understand that it's a busy day today, but I am not happy with the way that things went. I'm not, and assure them, I am not looking for a discount. I don't want anything. I'm just letting you know that today you fell short of my expectations, but most of the time you exceed them. If they do, if they don't, you fall short of my expectations today. You did it the last three times I came here. Unfortunately, I will not be coming here again. In fact, I've let everyone on my Yelp list know that I will not be coming here again. And that is what we need to do as consumers. We have the right to do it. You live in America. You have the First Amendment for now, you know, and I suggest you exercise your right to it.
Good words, some great things to think about, and maybe we can all save up and join you in Disney.
Hey,
at Disney.
Come on down. The rat's waiting for you.
All right. We've been talking with Mike Calvo here on the Serotalk podcast.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.